listening to Scopes Monkey Choir.
All right, episode 83.
Episode 83.
Scopes Monkey Choir, the podcast where music and sound meet science and skepticism.
I am Hai Ting.
I am Matthew. And episode 83, I said that already, and I'm holding a frog. More on that later.
I'm holding a frog, too.
And let's see, we're going on vacation, so we're doing this, and then next week there's going to be an interview episode.
Yes, an interview with Indra Viscontis.
Yeah. And then I think the week after that, I think we're probably not going to have anything. But we'll see. Maybe we'll try to
figure something out. Wow, you're thinking so far ahead on this.
I am an ape.
I can't even think about not podcasting in 3 weeks.
Anyway, we have a little house cleaning before we start talking about compassion. A couple of listener feedback things I just wanted to mention. First, regarding the last episode, actually both regarding the last episode, the loudness wars, listener Stephen Dawson contacted us. What does that mean?
I don't know.
I don't either. Anyway, contacted us. And he had a good point. He expanded on was something we sort of touched on, but he expanded on the fact that their analysis is entirely relating to the recordings presented in digital format, right? So the database only looks at digital formatted music, which we touched on, you know, because we said like, well, it doesn't include stuff that hasn't been digitized yet. But he had a further point on that, which was, for instance, all the remastering that's been happening of a lot of music. Like, when CDs first started, there was this initial dump where they just, like, labels were just dumping LPs onto CDs just to get the sales. But then music people actually care about, then they actually remastered for CD and everything. And anyway, I'm going to actually link to... he has a blog called Hi-Fi Writer, and he writes about this and other criticisms of the study. So I'm going to link to that in the show notes. I recommend you read it. But one other thing I wanted to say that he had a good point, which is he said, take for instance, if the database has the album Dark Side of the Moon in it, which it probably does.
Never heard of it.
Really? Fascinating.
What? Shut up. No, what? Of course I have. That was a joke.
I don't know. You don't...
Come on.
Tell me, you classical people.
I was a teenager
people,
in the 80s. I heard Dark Side of the Moon in a planetarium with a laser show.
Yay!
Not just knew it.
I was more of a Laser Zeppelin guy, but yeah, mm. I'm with you. So anyway, Dark Side of the Moon, he asks this question. If that's in the database, is it the late 80s CD version? Is it the mid-1990s remastered CD version? Or is it the 2003 remastered CD/SACD version? Or perhaps is it even the 2010 remastered CD version?
Or so, is it just the original dump?
Well, that would probably be the late 80s CD when they just were initially dumping things. So that's his point, is that there are like four different digital versions, and remastering always ends up with a different sort of average loudness to the music. So the point being, we don't know exactly what the database, if anything, has to say about Dark Side of the Moon, but there are four different digital versions, official digital versions, and each one would have a different average loudness. So that album, if it were in the database, would have four possible data points attached to it about that one album from the 70s or wherever, whenever it's from. So that's just an open question as to, is that a flaw in the data set? Is there any controlling for that? We don't know.
And it wasn't reported.
Not that I know of. Anyway, he writes about it more, so check it out.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you to Stephen. And also thank you to Dan in Anchorage. You may remember last week we had a little trouble pronouncing the name of the Finnish university that we were talking about. So he called into the monkey phone and told us that it's pronounced Aalto. Aalto.
Mm.
Something like that. Here's him saying it.
Aalto.
So, it's all clear now.
It's all clear now, sort of. Yes, wait. And then he taught me, wait. Kiitos, Dan. Yeah.
That's so nice. Thank you, Dan.
So shall we talk about compassion?
Well, first, I would like you to engage in a little activity with me.
Oh, is this the frog?
Take out your frog.
Take out my frog.
Here we are, okay. Holding the frogs.
Okay.
How are our frog levels?
They're pretty high.
Okay, hold your frog away from the microphone.
Hold your frog away from the mic.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Guten Morgen, gelber Frosch, komm auf meine Hand. Guten Morgen, gelber Frosch, wir tanzen den Rand. Quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. Wir geben uns ein Küsschen. Kuss, kuss, kuss.
I'm really bad at this. Don't tell anyone.
Did we coordinate well?
Not
our
really.
Timing?
Not particularly.
But a little bit?
A little bit.
Maybe?
Yeah. I think.
Are you feeling happier about podcasting with me now? Are we more cooperative?
Oh, yes. We're very compassionate and empathetic.
Maybe we should do it again.
I don't
okay,
think
this is from... this is for you don't think it's going to improve?
No, I don't think our poor listeners would want to hear a second verse. Not because of your lovely voice, of
course.
That
was an original song from a 2009 study in Germany. That was in German, in case no one noticed, by some psychologists named Kirshner and Tomasello. They were experimenting on four-year-olds. Always a good thing to do. And the idea was to the question that they were asking was whether engaging in coordinated musical activity would promote pro-social behavior, that is, cooperation and helpfulness, in pairs of four-year-olds. So they constructed this whole game involving frogs, much like the ones we were just playing. And I'm sure most of our listeners are musical enough to know what these little frogs look like, these little wooden frogs with ridges on their backs that you scrape.
Except that would, whether or not you know what they look like, wouldn't have anything to do with your musicianship. It would have to do with whether you have ever seen one before.
Gotcha. I suppose that's true. Whether you've seen one and knew that it was an instrument.
Right, yeah, okay. Granted.
You don't think that's more likely
I'm
that
just
musicians
being difficult.
Would know what this
I haven't read the study you're talking about, so I have no choice but to sit back and be difficult.
Maybe we'd better sing the frog song again.
No! Our poor... These people are trying to live their lives.
We're just trying to get you to cooperate with me.
No!
Clearly, this data point is skewing the study. Or maybe it really only works on four-year-olds.
Yeah.
German four-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I'm mentally like four and a half.
You're beyond the developmental period. So 96 four-year-olds played this game together in pairs. And half of the pairs were given their instructions using this song. And the idea was that there were these musical frogs that were on lily pads on a blue blanket that represented a pond. And the game was to wake up the frogs. And they were either instructed to do it just in spoken prose.
Mm-hmm.
They did get to play the frogs in spoken non-rhythmic speech.
Okay.
And they had to play the frogs to wake them up, but they weren't asked to coordinate their movements or to sing a song. And I believe that the experimenters gave them the instructions in the same words in both situations.
Uh-huh.
So even when they were not singing, they were still instructed in rhyme, just not in meter.
Okay.
So the situations were very similar, but one set of pairs had to sing and dance together and play their frogs in unison the way that we did. They had to coordinate their movements and sing in order to complete the task of, quote-unquote, waking up the frogs. And the other half did not have to sing together. They just had to, quote-unquote, wake up the frogs by picking them up and playing them non-rhythmically. And then they were asked to take part in another set of games that sounded to me quite similar to things that they make chimps do, cooperation games, where it becomes a lot easier and faster if you cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it by yourself it was something about putting marbles on an apparatus, and then the marble would roll down to the other end and you had to pull a string to get it to fall in a bucket. And there were two of these slides, and they were in opposite orientations. So that since there were two children, if you coordinated and put your marbles in at the opposite ends, but then pulled the other person's string, you could complete the task twice as quickly because you didn't have to run down to the other end of the slide and pull the string to get your marble to fall in. And then there was another thing actually before that, getting the marbles to the slides, they had to be put into cylinders. And they had been constructed artificially so that one child cylinder had a false bottom that would fall out as soon as it was picked up. And the other child cylinder did not break and drop the marbles.
Okay.
The reporting here used the phrase, literally lost their marbles for one of the children. And so the point of the experiment was to see whether children would help each other out more, like helping to pick up the marbles and helping to pull the strings, whether they would help each other more if they had made music together.
Right.
It was a very long, circuitous explanation to say that the experimenters were asking the question of whether making music together would make children of 4 years old more helpful and cooperative.
Right. And did it?
And it did, quite significantly, actually. Children who, well, first of all, it must be said, girls were much more helpful than boys in general.
Shocker.
But both genders increased their cooperativeness and helpfulness when they made music together.
Nice.
Now, the study was kind of done, the introduction to this study was kind of in the context of asking the question of how music evolved, which I think is one of those evolutionary psychology questions that is very prickly.
Right.
But they don't overstep in their conclusions, I would say. They offer all kinds of alternative explanations for why the children might be more helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them being that the singing and dancing might just put them in a better mood, which would make them more pro-social.
I have to admit that I've listening to you describe it, I did find myself thinking the difference between the control group was not just music but also dancing.
Whatever the effect is,
there's actually no way to tell them whether it's music or dancing or both.
It's true, and the experimenters referred to it as coordination of rhythmic activities.
Right.
Although
to sort of try to generalize.
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And some more recent experiments a couple of which came out just this week, which I think you've looked into, have looked at similar questions, and I think both sides of that question that we were just asking, whether it's actually the music or whether it's the coordination.
Well, I wanted to focus on this recent study out of Cambridge University. The key word they used was empathy as opposed to cooperation, which are different words. As actions, as experiences, they're certainly related, I would guess. Let me just describe this. They hypothesized that a weekly music-based lesson plan would over time result in increased empathetic skills, right? That was sort of the idea. So they actually took 52 children, ages 8 to 11. They put them into three groups. So in one group, they had what they called musical group interaction, or MGI, because, you know, when you're doing a paper, you have to have an acronym. The first of the two controls met with the same regularity as the group. And they did similar little program, but there was no music in it. It was all sort of words and sort of dramatic play, but no music. And then the other control group just had no activities whatsoever. They were just, like the others, tested at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. Right?
So they had no extra instruction of any kind.
Exactly. So they were just basically kids.
So they were, told to sit in the corner for 10 minutes?
For a year.
For a year.
No. Not even sitting in the corner for 10 minutes. They did nothing.
They just did
whatever they would normally do as children.
So they had 10 other extra minutes of other lessons.
Well, I guess technically, yes. But yes, I guess technically, whatever. Yes. Okay. Your turn to be difficult.
Exactly.
I understand.
I'm being very difficult.
I understand. So now it wasn't just playing music. Like, they weren't just scraping frogs and singing. It was actually a program that was specifically designed. It was a quote, consisting of interactive musical games implementing various empathy-promoting musical components. So anyway, they did this for a year. At the end of the year, the musical group scored statistically significantly higher.
On what?
Well, they described it, it's the tests as using existing and novel measures of empathy.
So not on musical tests. They didn't score higher on musical ability tests.
No.
That would have been.
And I didn't have access to the full paper. Not that I would be qualified to judge the tests anyway, but so I can't describe them any more than that. So the researchers themselves say they, of course, are careful, and they say the results are not conclusive, but that they appear to back a link between musical group playing and the development of empathy.
Well, there is certainly also a link between empathy and helpfulness. I mean, that's
right.
Pretty well established, yeah. And is almost the definition of empathy, but not quite.
Yeah, close
like
to
cooperation
it.
And helpfulness is the action
right,
that empathy
yes.
causes.
I did in my own like layman's way have some questions about this study. Just sort of in the you know, I'd love to see this, you know, someone peer review this and try to replicate it, or I'd love to see if there are any criticisms of it, because I couldn't help but notice that they figure out the tests that they're using to a test for empathy, basically. They figure out what the tests are, and then they also specifically design their music program. They specifically design it to using musical components that they think will increase empathy. So, in other words, they know what the tests are, they know what they're testing for, and they also design the program specifically to try to have the children do better on the test, right? So, two things on that. One is there's opportunity for bias in there, obviously. But maybe there isn't. I'm just saying there's an opportunity for it. And then the other thing, though, is that it's just sort of a word of caution, because it could mean that even if these results hold up, it could mean that it's not sort of playing music specifically that benefits the development of empathy, but that actually there's some sort of specific thing about the program that they put together that helps develop empathy. You know what I mean?
So I know what you mean.
So it wouldn't just be like, you know, have the kids play in band and they will increase their empathy. Right?
No, I know what you mean, but I didn't read the abstract of this paper, but I read some of the reporting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reporting on it seemed to me that what they were encouraging the children to do was similar to, but more complicated than, the study that I described. That is, they were coordinating their rhythm and musical activities together. And the point of encouraging, the idea of encouraging empathy in music making is to encourage the coordination, the actual coordination, playing together, listening to each other, watching each other's movements to try to anticipate when the other person is going to play the beat, the frog, the
right,
guitar.
Yeah.
And so it's a sort of literal encouragement of empathy, like physical empathy.
I basically agree with you, and I was putting it out there just as a question. It's just a word of caution.
Maybe I should say something also about what I saw, at least in the reporting, and it's always hard to trust the reporting, but the reporting on the tests that they were taking later mm-hmm. were much more about recognizing emotional facial expressions in
right,
people.
Right, yeah, in actors and
exactly,
and such, yeah.
Yeah, and so a different aspect of empathy than what people might be doing in music making.
Right, yeah. I also just wanted to mention, just as the skeptical angle, that as usual, the implied outcomes of studies, positive studies such as this, are something that I very much want.
Right,
as,
right,
you know,
right.
As a musician, I want it to be like, I want everyone to think, you know what? We need more music classes. And God, we have to hire more musicians and et cetera. I want all these things to be true. And so as a skeptic, I'm trying to be difficult, because
no,
that's being careful.
Maybe we should play those frogs again.
Ooh,
so you
yeah.
stop being so difficult.
Yeah. Being singing in German. Yeah, that didn't go too well.
Yeah, we were very uncoordinated in that case. Almost random.
We're tapping, right? That was all a very, very horrid segue.
Extremely noisy, froggy segue.
There was a New York Times a column just a couple days ago that talks about compassion and the science of compassion, I believe it was called. And they talk about various studies in it, but one that they talk about is this tapping study, which is kind of interesting. Now, they took 69 people and they paired them up. And
they took 69 people and they paired them up?
Well, let me finish. Let me finish. I hear what you're saying. First of all, you can't do 69 without two people.
The cheese stands alone, the cheese stands alone.
They took 69 people and they paired them with Confederates.
69 other people?
Yeah, 69 other people that were in on the study.
Oh.
Right? So I guess it was probably not 69 separate people, but probably the same researcher pretending.
69 pairs of people. Would you? The same researcher doing 69 with the six. What?
No. Yeah, exactly. Do you need to stand in the corner?
Oh, maybe I do, yes.
They paired up 69 people, test subjects, with 69 Confederates, namely people that were in on the study. And they set them up so they tapped their hands on sensors to tones. So I don't know exactly how the tones worked, but basically the tones guided the participants to either tap in synchrony or to not tap in synchrony.
They were each wearing separate earbuds.
Right, yes, headphones.
So they were not hearing the same tones at the same time. Same, yeah.
Yeah, but they could tell whether they were tapping in synchrony or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically they'd had all these people doing all this tapping, and so the control group, once again, is tapping not in synchrony, just whatever, tapping semi-randomly. And so, and then at some point, the participants see their tapping partner get cheated by someone else. And the result was that their partner got given an onerous task, which I think was like difficult word problems. Like that. So in other words, the study participant sees this cheating happen and sees their partner get given this onerous task, which is going to be annoying and keep them after everyone else leaves. They're going to have to stay and do this work, right? So, and they know it's not fair. They know they didn't deserve it. So, and then the participants were given an opportunity to help their partner if they wanted to, or they could just leave. So, the interesting result, and I like this study because it's so simple. It's just such a simple thing. The only difference was tapping in sync or not in sync.
You know, also, it must be said that people did not know that that was part of the study. They were told that the study was about musical ability and taste sensation or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It was just a total lie what they were told about the study.
So so the results were this. The people who tapped in synchrony with their partner, they helped their partner with the onerous task 30% more than the people who tapped not in synchrony.
For much longer when they helped. Right.
And they also increased the average time they spent helping their partner from an average of 1 minute to an average of more than 7 minutes, which is a lot.
Just doing that one thing that they didn't even really know they were doing.
And once again, the only difference was that they had tapped in synchrony for a minute or two.
Basically, this is the frog study conducted on adults.
Right, exactly. And it's just, I don't know I don't really have anything else to say about it.
It doesn't even really have a musical element. It's just a matter of synchronous movement.
Yeah.
And basically, I mean, I saw in the reporting that the experimenters had suggested that just the awareness of doing something at the same time as someone else kind of opens up your, well, once again, they use the word empathy and compassion, but it just opens up the idea that you might be like this person.
Right,
or
yes.
Or that you are a similar creature, or that they have a mind that is like yours, whatever it is. It opens
hey, maybe
you up
when
to,
I see, the color red that I see is also the color red that they see. our subjective experience. I'm sorry. I'm not actually making fun of it. I have to say that I did in some of the reporting and also in some of the papers for these studies and others like it. I do get a little. There's a little over speculation, I think, in some of the, like, therefore this means that humans are this, or, you know.
Sure.
I'm perfectly happy to sit here and not say anything more than. That's cool.
It is really cool. And the fact that these three studies just popped up out of a sea of studies into this kind of thing, well, we just thought we would talk about these three that had come up and that looked at the problem from three different angles.
Yeah.
And that all showed, I mean, these are all positive studies, but they all show an interesting kind of effect from music and yay music.
Onward to the future.
Is it time to sing the frog song with the dirty English words?
Oh, there are dirty English words?
Well, they're not dirty, but...
What do they mean?
But in the supplemental materials, they put in the German song... In the supplementary materials, they printed the German song with a singable English translation. And This is a singable English translation. Good morning, yellow frog. Get on my hand. Good morning, yellow frog, we dance around the rim. Quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. We give each other kisses. Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Alright, so they're kissing each other in their... Scopes Monkey Choir.
From scopesmonkeychoir.com.
We are professional musicians, not scientists. If you doubt something we said, don't believe us, look it up yourself. Nevertheless, each episode's page at scopesmonkeychoir.com has references and citations. We welcome your feedback. Write to scopesmonkeychoir@gmail.com or call the monkey phone and leave a message. 347-788-0330. I tweet at Squidocto.
I tweet sometimes at scopesmonkeys.
Bye.
Bye.